And now session 3 of The Wisdom of Your Cells, The Complexity of Wholeness with Dr. Bruce Lipton.
The most exciting part of biology for me is the nature of how the signals actually impact the cells. This is the study that I told you I got involved with when I understood how the environment was influencing the cells and the genetic expression, and that I needed to find out how does a signal from the environment enter into a cell and then impact the functions of the cell. So as I started to describe my search, I first focused on the cell membrane because it was the primary organelle and the only organelle that's present in all living systems. When you first look at the cell membrane in the electron microscope, it appears just like a little thin layer, like a saran wrap covering up the cytoplasm. But at higher resolution, you could see that this little tiny membrane layer actually is composed of 3 layers. In the microscope, it's actually stained dark, light, dark, the 3 layers, so you can identify these 3 layers. And the significance is that the 3 layers actually represent the interaction of a primary one kind of molecule called a phospholipid. A phospholipid is a unique molecule. It looks like a lollipop with a stick, actually a lollipop with 2 sticks. And what's unique about the molecule is this. In the world of chemistry, we can divide all the molecules that make up the world into 2 different types. One group we call polar, and the other group is called nonpolar. There are 2 different kinds of molecules and how they relate to each other. Polar, as the name says, means that the molecules have charges, like positive and negative charges, and so they have polarized regions to them. Nonpolar molecules do not have any charge. They're just like relatively neutral. And the difference between those 2 kinds of molecules, polar and nonpolar, is the difference between water and oil. Water is polar. Oil or gas, if we want to use that derivative, is nonpolar. And the relevance about this is when you try to mix polar and nonpolar, they don't mix at all. Polar molecules with charges like to bind to other polar molecules because positive charges attract negative charges. And so polar molecules are like little magnets that when you put them together, they're all going to start clinging onto each other and form an assembly of their positive and negative charges. Nonpolar molecules are more independent. They just float in a solution, and there's no tendency for them to be bound together with charges. So that this is why oil and water don't mix, because they're completely different kinds of polarities. Well, this is where the nature of the cell membrane is unique, because the primary molecule making up the cell membrane is a molecule, as I mentioned, the phospholipid, the lollipop with 2 sticks. It is a molecule that is half polar and half nonpolar. The head of the lollipop, the candy part, is polar. The 2 sticks are nonpolar. So in a sense, this molecule is like a schizophrenic molecule. Polar molecules like to be dissolved in polar solutions. Nonpolar molecules like to be dissolved in nonpolar solutions. So what about a molecule that's half polar and half nonpolar? Well, it has a very surprising behavioral activity. That when you shake up a solution of these little molecules that look like lollipops would stick, they form a crystalline array. Meaning this, the molecules aren't just jumbled together, they actually form themselves like a carpet. And what you find is this, that the molecules form what is called a bilayer. Bilayer means 2 layers. That on one layer, all the phospholipids are lined up. So, for example, consider all the molecules like lollipops with their heads on the flat part of a table and their legs sticking up so that the entire table surface is covered with the lollipop heads, and that sticking up from the table are all the legs of these lollipops. What I want you to do is take a mirror image of that and have another layer where the heads are up and the legs are sticking down. And then put the 2 layers together. And what would you have? Well, you'd have 3 layers. You'd have lollipop heads, a central layer where the tails from both layers are facing each other, and then the third layer is the lollipop heads from the bottom layer. So we have heads, tails, heads in that sequence. In the electron microscope, the heads stain black with a stain, the tails don't stain. So when you look in the electron microscope at a cell membrane, you see a layered structure, dark, light, dark. And the relevance about this, to give you a more conventional analogy that you could probably appreciate, would be the equivalent of a bread and butter sandwich. That the bread would be the equivalent of the lollipop heads, and the butter inside would be the equivalent of the legs, because the legs are oil-loving, and the heads are polar water-loving. So I create a sandwich out of these molecules, and it's three layers, and it's the equivalent of bread, butter, and bread, or polar heads, nonpolar tails, and polar heads. And they, as I said, all these molecules are regimented, lined up each other just like soldiers, so the membrane has a crystalline structure to it. That's what the phospholipids are creating. But now it's a bread and butter sandwich kind of structure, and it functions like that in this regard. Think about it this way. Bread can absorb things like water, but butter is oil, and water and oil, they don't mix together. So I have a layer over the surface of the cell, like a spherical shaped bread and butter sandwich. And what's the point? And the point is, while the cell lives in the ocean, or the equivalent of an ocean, a saltwater solution, the outside components of the water in the ocean can't enter into the cell for this reason. Imagine that bread and butter sandwich. Let's take a bread and butter sandwich, put it on a plate. And it has a thick layer of butter, not a little piece of butter, but a thick layer of butter, so that the layer of the bread and the layer of the butter are about the same thickness. So I have three uniform layers, two bread, one butter. And I take this bread and butter sandwich, and I take a teaspoon of blue dye in water, and I drop it on top of the bread and butter sandwich. Of course, the first thing that's going to happen is the blue dye is going to soak into the bread, so that you can see that the top layer of bread is soaking in the blue dye. But the question is this, did the blue dye cross through the sandwich and wet the plate, yes or no? And the answer is no, for this reason. If you section that sandwich, take a knife and cut the sandwich where the blue dye was, you can see while the blue dye is soaked into the bread, when it hit the butter layer, that's where it stopped. Why? Because water can't go through oil. So when you understand that, then you recognize that this sandwich layer that is surrounding the surface of the cell is a barrier. It separates the inside from the outside so that the membrane of the cell is the skin. It prevents stuff from getting from the outside to going inside and preventing stuff from the inside from leaking out so that the skin is a barrier. And that is the basic structure of the cell membrane. And so the interesting part about these molecules is that they don't stick together with bonds or junctions. They're not glued together. The molecules are just sort of squeezing in because of their desire for the heads to be next to other heads, which are charged, and their legs to be next to other legs, which are not charged. So an analogy again. Consider this. You step into an elevator that's filled with people. You just squeeze in. They close the door. Recognize this. Everybody's polarized, meaning this. Their heads are up and their feet are down. So everybody's like regimented like soldiers in that room. But nobody is stuck to each other so that when the door opens at the next floor, somebody from the back can sort of squeeze between everybody and find themselves getting out of the elevator. What was the point? The point is this, the molecules that make up my bread and butter sandwich are like squeezed in this relationship. They're not physically attached to each other, so that if I would mark one of those phospholipid molecules with an X, and then came back a thousandth of a second later, I would find that the one I marked is somewhere else, because the molecules are moving. But they don't lose their orientation. They're all still polarized, heads up, legs down in one layer, and heads down, legs up in the other layer. They're polarized, just like the people in the elevator. And yet, here's the interesting thing. They're still liquid, meaning that they can move around. And why this is relevant is, if the cell membrane was actually a hard crystal like salt or quartz or something like that, the membrane would be rigid and the cell would be just like a little piece of a rock. It wouldn't be able to change its shape. Yet the cell membrane is made out of these components that keep their polarity, meaning they keep their regimentation, yet they're able to move around. And this provides for the dynamic nature of the cell membrane. It's a flexible membrane and can change its shape as a cell changes its shape. So to give you a meaning of what that is the membrane is crystalline because all the molecules are registered like soldiers on parade. But it's liquid because the soldiers aren't glued to each other so they can move around. It's sort of like how a big band, like on a parade, can march down a road and then make a left turn. And the band moves as a group around the corner, but they're still keeping their registered appearance. So they're in that coherent group. Point, the phospholipids making up the fundamental barrier of the cell membrane are defined as a liquid crystal. And that gives the membrane flexibility, but it's also a barrier because the butter middle in that membrane, the lipid center of that membrane, doesn't allow the contents of the ocean to enter the cell or the contents of the cell to exit. If the membrane were just lipids, like I described, it wouldn't be viable. It wouldn't provide for a living cell for a very simple reason. In order to live, you have to get nutrients in, and you have to get rid of waste matter. If the entire cell membrane was a skin that prevented the outside and inside from interacting, it wouldn't provide for life because you couldn't get food in, you couldn't get waste matter out. So a membrane of just phospholipids alone make a barrier, but not a viable membrane for a living system. To make a living membrane, you have to add another component besides the lipids that we just talked about. And you have to add proteins. But we already talked about proteins. So what we find now, we have knitted proteins that are inserted into my bread and butter sandwich. To give you a visual image of what would that look like, imagine a sandwich of bread and butter with olives in it, and that the olives are filling in the middle portion of that sandwich, and that these represent the proteins. I said there are thousands and thousands of different kinds of proteins, and that proteins can respond to signals by changing their shape. Now, when I say that, then I say this. The proteins that are built into the membrane, they're collectively grouped by the term integral membrane proteins. Integral meaning part of the membrane. They're integral to the membrane. These proteins are built into it. That these IMPs, that's the short word for integral membrane proteins, these IMPs, a very large population of them built into the membrane, 100,000 or more proteins built into each cell, maybe several hundred thousand proteins built into the skin of each cell in this membrane. I can conveniently divide the protein population into two different kinds of proteins that are built into my sandwich. One group of proteins we call receptors. And receptors, as the name says, are receivers. Receptors are proteins that are built into the membrane that receive information from the environment. And it's interesting because if I look at you and I say, well, there you are sitting or whatever you're doing at this one moment, and I say, do you have receptors? And of course you say, of course I've got some very big ones. I've got eyes, ears, nose, taste, touch. I have pain receptors. I have pressure receptors. I have sense receptors all over my skin. And that's the point. Your receptors you use to read the environment. Your eyes see the environment. Your ears listen to what's going on. Your nose smells what's going on in the environment. You can taste the environment. Here's an interesting point. These are called receptors. These are your human receptors. Where are they located? Think about it for a second. They're all built into the skin. So now when I'm talking about the cell and its receptors built into the skin, they're the same in a sense of function to the receptors built into your skin. That with your receptors, you can read the environment. Signals come to your eyes and you interpret them. Signals come to your ears and you take them in and interpret them. Cells have receptors, not as complex as human because cells are a simpler version. The cell receptors are generally proteins with antennas on them. The antennas are primarily sugar molecules that are attached to the proteins. So on the surface of the cell are large numbers of proteins with antennas sticking out. It reminds me in the old days before cable TV, when you'd go to like a big city and you see a big apartment building, and on top of the building there'd be like 100 different television antennas, one for each of the apartments inside. Well, on the surface of the cell, it would look like one of those giant apartment complexes with 100,000 or more antennas sticking out from the surface, each antenna connected to a protein built into that membrane. The relevance of this is that the receptors and their antennas are tuned to environmental signals, meaning, in the sense of physics, they are harmonically resonant to the signals of the environment. So if a hormone, let's say estrogen, shows up in the presence of the cell, how would the cell know estrogen is in the world? And the answer is, because on that cell, there'll be a receptor, a protein, with an antenna that will resonate harmonically with the signal from the estrogen. There'll be another protein right next to it, let's say a calcium receptor. But if estrogen shows up, the signal of estrogen is only harmonic to the receptor for estrogen and is not harmonic with the receptor for calcium. So to read the estrogen, I need an estrogen receptor. To read calcium, I need a calcium receptor. To read glucose, I need a glucose receptor. To read adrenaline, I need adrenaline receptors. What's the point? And the point is this. For everything the cell can see in its world, it must have a receptor that is tuned to that signal. So by putting signal receptors in the surface of cells, cells will then respond to when those signals show up in the environment. But then the question is, well, okay, I have a receptor for estrogen. Estrogen shows up. How does the receptor relay to the cell that the estrogen is present? And then we go back to an earlier discussion that said, when a signal binds to a protein, it causes the protein to change shape. So all of a sudden, I go back to our story. There's the estrogen molecule. It just shows up in the environment. There's a protein with an antenna that's going to respond to the estrogen. So when the estrogen shows up, what is the consequence? What happens to the receptor? The answer is, it changes its shape. So in other words, while the estrogen receptor is in the membrane, I can tell if estrogen is there or not by looking at the shape of the estrogen receptor. When estrogen is not there, the estrogen receptor will have shape A, which in protein talk is called conformation A. But when the estrogen shows up, it causes the knitting of the receptor protein to change its structure, and then the protein changes its shape. So let's say now it has shape B, conformation B. So the idea is this. If I'm inside the cell, can I tell what's going on outside the cell? And the answer is yes, for this reason. When the receptor proteins are built into the membrane, part of the receptor sticks out and reads what's going on in the outside world, and part of the protein extends through the membrane into the cell. So by looking at the tail of the protein receptor and looking at its shape, I can tell you if that receptor is seeing the signal or not seeing the signal based on its shape. So it says this, I could be sequestered inside a cell, and I can tell you what's going on in the world by looking at the receptor proteins that are penetrating through the membranes. The receptor proteins that see their signal are going to move and change shape. The ones that don't see their signal are going to just remain quiet and constant in the shape that they're maintaining. So the interesting part is this. The protein receptors act as devices built into the membrane that will read the environmental signal and relay the fact that the signal is there by responding and changing its shape. And since the protein extends into the cell, then inside the cell, we can monitor the shape change by looking at that protein. So part one of dealing with the environment is reading what's going on in the environment. And the reader of the signals are called protein receptors. And on the surface of your cells, you may have 100,000 protein receptors and very many thousands of different kinds all over the surface of the cell, waiting for signals to show up. Again, add this fact. The signals can be physical chemicals like estrogen or histamine or glucose or calcium, or they could be vibrational signals such as light. As well, light can be picked up, radio frequencies can be picked up, various forms of the electromagnetic spectrum can be recognized by proteins as signals and cause the receptors to change their shape when the signals show up. So the point is, the cell is reading both the physical and non-physical elements of the environment through these proteins. Well, that's part one, meaning this. Okay, the proteins recognize that the signal is there. But now what are you going to do? Well, you have to make a response, because when a signal shows up, you adjust your biology. So for example, if food shows up in your cell, you want to move to the food and take it in. If you have receptors for toxins and toxins show up and the toxin receptor is activated, the cell wants to move away from the toxin. So basically it says this, signals generally encourage a response that causes the cell to deal with the signal in such a way as to maintain its survival. Food is out there, take it in. Toxins out there, escape and avoid them. How do you know if they're out there? Because we have receptors that are reading them. But then how do we engage the behavior? And that's the next part. And that part is another group of membrane proteins. Remember I said I could divide the population of proteins in the membrane, the IMPs, into two groups. The group one we discussed were called receptors. Their function, read the environmental signal, and when you identify a signal, change your shape. The second group of proteins constitute a whole diverse family of proteins called effector proteins. They make an effect. They send a signal into the cell that will engage the functional mechanisms in the cell, like the protein for movement. So if I engage them, I can cause the cell to move. Or I can engage the digestion proteins, which will cause the cells to activate the digestion process. Or the effector can cause the cell to change its respiration, or any of the behaviors of the cell. So basically, I have two populations of proteins in the membrane. One of them reads an environmental signal. The other group, called the effector proteins, when activated, send signals into the cell to engage any of the physiological functions of the cell that will be required for the cell to survive. Let me give you an analogy with a human so you can understand the relationship. If I walk out my door and it's hot out, my skin has receptors that will read the temperature. So my receptors pick up the fact that it's hot. But then I have to send a signal into my body to change my respiration and my blood circulation and cause me to actually perspire so I could cool myself down. So I read an environmental signal, the temperature, and then part two, from that reading of the signal, I engage an effect, which is to change my physiology to cool my temperature down so I keep a constant 98.6. In contrast, I walk out the door and it's cold out. Well, I have different receptors for the cold. When they read that signal, they send a signal into my body, which adjusts my body to increase its metabolism, generate more heat, so I can keep my 98.6 in spite of the fact that the environment is a lot colder. The significance is the parallel. The skin of the cell and the skin of the human are doing exactly the same thing. They're reading environmental signals. Our receptors, of course, are more complex, involving things such as eyes and ears and nose and stuff like that. The cells are more simple, but fundamentally the same. They're proteins that read specific signals. They can read light. They can read temperature. They can read glucose and histamine and any of the hormones or stress factors in the human body. They can read those signals. And just like in our human body, when the signal is read by the skin, a signal is sent from the skin to go interior to the body and adjust the physiology to meet the need that the environment is presenting. The same thing occurs in the cells. The receptors read the environment, and an activated receptor, one that's changed its shape, will be designed to couple to an effector protein, which then sends a signal into the cell to engage a specific function. So at the surface of the cell, I have complexes of proteins, receptors that read an environmental signal, and then once activated because it sees a signal, the receptor is designed to engage with one of the other membrane proteins called an effector. The effector is the one that sends the physical signal into the cell to select a program by the cell to respond to that signal, such as move away from this signal or move toward this signal. That's what the function of the effector would do, would engage that movement behavior. So now we stand back and we say, okay, at the surface of the cell, in the membrane, are mechanisms that are designed to read the environment, and then upon receipt of certain signals, effector proteins then send signals inside the cell and then turn on and off or regulate the activity of the physiology mechanisms that keep the cell alive. These two proteins collectively, which I call an IMP complex, integral membrane protein complex, which consists primarily of a receptor that reads an environmental signal and an effector, which is designed to elicit a response from an internal functional mechanism like digestion or respiration or movement or whatever. These two proteins, receptor and effector, come together and operate in tandem with each other. So when no signal is present, the effector is not engaged and does not control the function. When a signal shows up, it activates the receptor, changes its shape. The new shape of the receptor allows it to plug into the effector, and that causes the effector to change shape, and the changing shape of the effector is what sends a signal to engage the function of the cell. These are switches. These switches control all of the diverse functions. This is a somewhat reductionistic approach, meaning this. I've done what my contemporaries have done through all these years, and that is take the cell apart down to its nuts and bolts and then come to this point where I say, okay, here's the final nuts and bolts of the switch. This is a switch that controls biology. It's built into the membrane, the skin of the cell. This is a switch that is activated by an environmental signal, and as a result, the effector protein, when engaged, will then activate a function in a cell that will result in a behavior that will keep the cell alive in the environment observed. We're talking about one single switch. What really blew my mind when I stopped long enough after getting to this reductionistic approach was to realize for a moment and say, oh my goodness, but on the surface of the cell at any one time, there are over 100,000 different switches, every one of them in some various state of responding or not responding to environmental signals. So while I can describe the nature of one signal engaging one response, we have to incorporate the complexity of wholeness. That is the nature, again, of quantum mechanics. It says it's not reductionism, it's wholeness. If you really want to know what the cell is doing, you can't look at any one switch. You have to identify what 100,000 switches are doing at any one time before you will really be able to figure out what's going on. Unfortunately, the numbers of interactions really go beyond our ability to construct that in our minds and would be a very, very difficult project to even construct for computer engineering to identify what would be the resultant behavior of an organism in the environment where it's dealing with over 100,000 different impulses at the same time. Yet, while that might be complex, we can still pull back and say this. Every single mechanism works the same in this regard, that there's a switch built into the cell membrane whose function is to read the environmental signal and through that process connect the effector protein that will engage an internal function to meet the demands of that environment. And as a result of that, we'll be able to adjust our biology dynamically as we move from one environment to another environment, because as we start to see new things in the environment, it engages other switches, which then engage other functions, and it's the integration of all of these functions which collectively result in our behavior.